Hello and welcome to Interactive Distractions, episode number 416. My name is Christopher Kyo, and I'm here with Travis Baum.
Hey, what's up?
And that's it. Jeff's not feeling well, so we hope the best for him. I hope he feels better. Hopefully he'll be here next week. But for now, it's just Trav and I. We're going to talk about some games and how difficult it is to make them. But before we do that, let's see what's going on. Travis, how you doing, buddy?
I'm going to take umbrage in what you said just a second ago. Oh. Just Travis and I? People should be delighted that they get us, Chris.
Don't push your luck, dude.
It's just us today.
Don't push your luck.
It's just us two guys.
Thank you for listening.
We appreciate you guys listening, even though it's just us.
So, no, things are going well. This past weekend, my girlfriend and I went and had a sushi dinner date with some of her friends, people I've never met before, which can be an awkward situation, right? I mean, like...
Can be.
Yeah, you never know, like, what you're walking into.
Sure, sure.
You're gonna gel with people and everything. For me, historically, like, one of the things that I can't stand the most... are like going to like, as much as I love weddings, I don't like going to weddings where I really don't know the people getting married, or I'm not going to know anyone at the wedding. And especially if it's like some sort of assigned seating at a wedding and you're forced to, like, throughout the evening speak to this very, very small specific group of people all night, and then the whole, like, what do you do, I do this, well, I do that, how's the weather, you know, stuff. I have no interest in that kind of small talk. Like, I would like to have, like, really, like, meaty conversations with people. So it's always good to have, like, some sort of common bond when you do that and everything. So that's always going through your mind when you're meeting people for the first time. So we meet this couple, and lovely people, by the way. And we sit down, maybe we're there 10 minutes, and one of the girls just put it out there, "Hey, my guy likes the game." So of course both of our eyes light up. "So what are you playing?" And he says, "Well, I'm playing a little game called Destiny 2." And I said, "It's going to be a good night."
And then your girlfriend facepalmed and left.
No, they were excited. They were completely excited that that
you guys had something to talk about.
We had that immediate bond from the get-go, 10 minutes into the conversation. So
yeah.
So that was good. It was a lot of talking about, you know, where they're at and what we're up to, what we like about it, what we plan on doing the next couple of weeks. So that was fun. So the girls had their conversations and we had ours and whatnot. So I think they both knew and didn't tell us that we both played Destiny 2. I'm like, we're just going to let them discover it. I think they did, because, like, one of the things that Melissa and I always do, we never like to sit, when we go to do dinner with just us, we never sit across from each other. We always sit next to each other.
Sure.
It's just, we prefer that. So when we sat down, the girls specifically sat next to each other. And I'm like, okay, that's very unlike Melissa to just rush to the other side and sit with the other girl in the group.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, something's afoot. Like, they're forcing something. And then when they brought up, "Hey, you play video games, don't you?" And I was like, okay, this was a setup from the beginning, using Destiny as bait. And you know what? I'm not mad at it. It was a fun night.
It was a good night. It's all right.
Well, the funny thing too, like, well, obviously, after we hit it off, me and this guy Cody. Hey, Cody, if you're not listening, I know he's not. but we ended up, sharing details and everything. Actually, with the PlayStation app, we just became friends right there. It's the age we live in. So we did that, and then the next night I jumped in a party that he was in, or I invited him into a party that I started. So it was just him and I in the room chatting and everything like that. And then Melissa got home from work and she was like, "I just got a text that you guys were talking on PlayStation." So obviously the girls were really excited that we had already started chatting online. So,
oh man.
Anyway, they were playing Best Bud Matchmaker, I guess. That was their goal that night. And they succeeded. He's a fine young gentleman. That's pretty much it, man. Work's busy. My direct superior is out, so I have a lot of busy extra work to do on top of my normal on top of my normal responsibilities, but it's been a pretty good week. It's been a nonstop work week. Usually you get a moment to take a breath, you know, step outside, get some fresh air, take a 10 minute or something like that. It's been balls to the wall crazy, but a fun week. It's nice to have that extra responsibility sometimes. Like, it gives you an extra level of drive. It's like, okay, it's time to really step it up, bring my A game, because, you know, it's up to me to get this stuff done. So I kind of like that feeling. It pushes me further to want to do a better job. So that being said, it really made for a pretty productive and fun work week. So, cool. But what about you, man?
Yeah, not a lot going on. I could talk about a lot of things, but I don't think they're right for the show because they're not positive things at this point. Got bad news at work, and I want to keep it there for the time being until I know more of what's going on. It's not bad news for me. It has to do with my manager. So I'm fine. My job is fine, but
that was the only thing I was worried about.
There's no issue there. Everything is pretty good on this side. Last week I took a few days off to try and finish up clearing out our garage at the new place.
I thought you were going to say finish Spider-Man. But
well, I did that too.
We know what you really took off for.
We know what you're doing. Had to get the garage prepared for our new car, which apparently is going to be delivered a week from today, Friday. So hopefully that all works out. I've got all of the information I need to give them already put in. So, hopefully that's going to work out for us, and we can get my wife into a new car.
Exciting.
Yes, very. Oh, no. I have to mention this because we're talking about this very thing.
Okay.
So our friend Serena is getting one, and she's supposed to pick it up tomorrow.
Right.
And she just sent me a message that says, guess who just got yanked around on her delivery?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so you guys know about, I've already talked about on the show what happened to me at the end of last month, right? With the text that I got and shit like that.
You had to go out of state, across the country.
How they accidentally said it was in Salt Lake City, and then when they finally said, oh, yeah, it's in Alpharetta, I said, great, I'll pick it up at 11 o'clock, and they never got back to me until like 24 hours later and then said, oh, we don't have a car for you. Apparently something similar happened to Serena, where they had a delivery date set up for her, and she said, I'm going to be out of town. Can I pick it up 4 days later? And they said, no, we're going to give it to someone else. So
that's ridiculous.
The one thing I could say is, like, the entire Tesla delivery experience so far,
it's a mess.
Has been shit. It has been fucking shit. And I guess the one bonus is that the financing has been fantastic. Like, the communication between financing and us is great, because of course it is. They want your money, right? So apparently they want your money. They just don't want to give you a fucking car. Anyway, I'm going to get back to that another time. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really the business of the podcast, but I just found it interesting that we were just talking about it.
I say we bring our first Dear X in a long time back to the podcast. Let's make it
Dear
about the
Elon Musk.
Dear Elon Musk. Let's chat. You are a visionary.
Real talk, motherfucker.
A little crazy sometimes, but you're entertaining nonetheless, and you're a visionary. You are one of the most intelligent people on the planet. I respect you for the ideas that you have, and that's your strongest point. You are an idea man. You come up with really, really great stuff.
So find an idea to fix your fucking delivery problems.
Your logistics leaves more to want, my friend. Like, you need to work on logistics. It's not your strong suit. You have an opportunity, you know? Go do that. Fix that.
Because
people want your shit. So make sure people who are buying your shit get your shit. Like, he is all over the place, man. Like, I got to tell you,
he's the kind of person that really needs to stop and think about the words he's about to say before he says them, because he doesn't do that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's move on.
That's fine.
Other than that, normal stuff. Kids are doing great. My wife is doing great. So life is good. Trying to make it every day. So, and playing a lot of fucking video games.
We are doing that.
So let's do that. Let's talk about that. What you got this week, man? Tell me.
So we can get through Destiny stuff. Getting close to 600, inching ever so close. I think I can get like 591 right now. So close to that level cap. Still haven't beat the raid. Still haven't made it past the second encounter in the raid, so that's a little frustrating.
Okay. I played with Dave's crew a little bit, and I got to past the third encounter.
Okay.
We finished the third encounter. We didn't actually do anything after that. After we finished the third encounter, it was one of those, fuck it, and we're done.
Right, so. That makes sense. Yeah. But so still wanting to do that, scheduling that with our clan this time around. I don't know what has happened to our group of people, but scheduling for the raid has been anything short difficult. Of miserable.
Yeah, it really
has been really hard. I really would like to finish that raid before, you know, Red Dead comes out, because I mean, I'll be definitely be dropping Destiny full time when Red Dead's available. So
I would imagine so, yeah.
I really would like to beat it then. I will say one good thing about Destiny. Weeks and weeks and weeks I've been complaining about the issue with exotics, and just they're not dropping for me, whether I'm turning in quests or whether or not they're dropping, you know, organically in the world. I'm just not getting them. I would get one or two, you know, after my initial barrage of complaints. Dave from PS Nation actually said that, hey, why don't you try this out, because there are some, you know, rumblings online and on Reddit that the emblems that you have for your character, the ones that track, may actually be bugging out drop rates.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I changed it to a non-tracking emblem, just one that just plainly states my level. And, oh my God, I got 4 exotics last week. I got 5 this week, and one of those was a organic world drop. So if you're having issues with exotics still in Destiny,
it could be a coincidence, but why fuck with it? Just try it anyway.
Yeah, it anyway. It's give it a shot, because
you never know.
If it's not a coincidence, it worked for me. So that's been cool. Now, they've all been year one exotics. I'm not getting like any brand new ones, but I'm getting the exotics nonetheless. So at least now I have the ability to switch my complaint from I'm not getting exotics to I'm not getting year two exotics. So I feel like I'm now caught up with, you know, everybody else's complaints.
Yeah, I have gotten some year two exotics. I've gotten 3 of them so far. They've all been weapons. And I'm not complaining that they've all been weapons, because I feel, you know, it's lucky that I got them. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I got, I'm not sure if, were you there for it?
I
got the Cerberus, yeah.
Yeah.
Cerberus is fun. It's a fun little weapon. As far as Destiny goes, I do like what they're doing right now, which is that Festival of the Lost. Have you done anything with that yet?
I have not, no. I'm not interested in it. Like the carrot on the stick is a level 600 auto rifle. It's a really good roll, but I mean, I don't really use auto rifles that much anymore, and B, I have a couple of auto rifles that have a really great roll on them regardless. So it's like, why grind for something that is a toss up between that and what I already have? Like, I don't know. I'm not really interested in Festival of the Lost whatsoever. It's a cool multi-tier, multi-week event that's happening, and you know what we have right now to do for Festival of the Lost, it's going to evolve, and there's going to be more to do, some story-based missions, a murder mystery, and everything like that, but I'll play that stuff, but when it comes to activities regarding what's available now, like with the auto rifle and the Haunted Forest, I'm really not that interested in it.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, the Haunted Forest is pretty damn fun. I mean, it's essentially a survival mode of sorts, it's interesting, and I like it. And the carrot on the stick is nice, but I could do without the masks. I think the masks are ridiculous. I do like that they actually do something now. So when you put the mask on, they essentially have different levels of unlockable abilities to them. So when you first get it, you can attach one of 3 different mods, and the mod will give you do extra damage to all enemies, or do extra damage to challenging enemies, or do extra damage to nightmares, which are the ones at the end of each of the rounds. But after you do, after you get through, like, for the kills, after you get a certain number of kills, then it unlocks another power where you get an increased chance to have a heavy drop. And then you get a different unlockable that allows you to, take more damage while you're in the air or something like that. So they're doing little things to make it more, tolerable to have something that has a zero power on it and drop your level down 80 levels. But, yeah, I find it interesting. It's fun. I played some with Slugga yesterday, and I played with Nogs a bit on, Wednesday. So, it's good. It's a good time, dude. Give it a shot.
I respect that they're doing different things. They're trying different stuff out.
I'll be honest with you. Compared to last year's Festival of the Lost, like, this is a big step in the right direction.
Right. So. Right. Even though I have no personal interest in it, I do respect it for that. It's something more more interesting and more fun for players to do. And the fact that even though I'm not interested in the auto rifle, like, you still get an awesome carrot at the end of this, like, you know, at the end of, you know, doing the farming that you need to do to get it. So it is, I like what they're doing for sure. I mean, I like what they're doing, you know, ever since the last couple of, you know, updates since Forsaken. Like, I'm just really pleased. You know, a lot of my major issues at some point have been rectified respectively quickly. Like, it's, I'm happy where the game's at. It's just that my frustrations are, I want to now complete the things that we haven't had a chance to complete yet. So we can have that full experience, get the raid experience, and get better at that, where it's more second nature to perform, you know, all the activities in there. So that's kind of the goal now, because the level cap will come, like, as you play more and more. So yeah, I'm not really stressed out about getting that done. I would like to have 600 and the raid done before Red Dead. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, so. And you can always take, like, one night breaks from Red Dead, like, for the hell of it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Not likely.
From what I'm seeing and reading online, it's probably going to take most of my time. Sure. Okay.
Well, I'm at 584 now, I think. So.
Right. Nice. So, on top of that, I've been having quite a bit of fun with Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Okay.
Quite a bit of fun. So
I hear this one is a lot bigger than all the previous ones.
It is a hefty game. That is for sure. Assassin's Creed has with last year's Origins, has greatly evolved into something much more different than what it has been in the past. It's much more engrossing. Did you play Origins at all to kind of experience these changes? So it's definitely much more of an RPG. There's gear that's very reminiscent of how Destiny handles gear, with the different rarity types and different perks on each sets of gear, and a new way to balance out the skill tree to where it's not just, hey, you're adding awesome new attacks or you can climb faster. Now it's allowing you to min-max builds. So it's really on that cusp of like an action and an RPG. So I like what they're doing. I didn't really get into Origins very much. I maybe played about 15 hours. So I was a point where I was saying to myself, this is a good game. I see where it's at, but the Egyptian time period does not interest me one bit. And that's important with an Assassin's Creed game. If you're playing an Assassin's Creed game and you're a history nut, but you're playing a point in time in human history where it's, to you personally, it's not very interesting, that's really going to hinder your experience of that game, because the historic elements of Assassin's Creed are so important. They're so deeply rooted in that series. But being a huge fan of Greek mythology and things like that, that completely changed for me with Odyssey. This game is a lot of fun, and I want to make sure that is prefaced throughout the entire section of criticisms I could have for this game. Because this game is all over the place. It is a ton of fun to play. I think it's the most fun Assassin's Creed I've ever played my entire life. But this game almost goes out of its way to not feel like Assassin's Creed anymore. I think Ubisoft said, when originally Ubisoft said that, hey, we're not going to do a yearly release anymore after, I forgot what game was the last one before they didn't release one the following year. It wasn't Unity. I'm not really sure. But I thought they were going to come back and just do standard Assassin's Creed, so they surprised everybody with Origins and the RPG elements, and then they brought, you know, a year later, brought more of the same game, but with the Greek mythology aspect of it. But they try to do so much more. So you have the Origins gameplay, you have the RPG elements back, but you also have the naval element of, like, Black Flag, which is very, very welcome because, I mean, most people will agree that Black Flag is their favorite Assassin's Creed of this generation, and it's a phenomenal game, and Odyssey is better for having that element in there. But they also do, like, a very, very light version of the Lord of the Rings Nemesis system, and then they do, like, Dynasty Warrior-esque, like, big conquest battles, and, like, they're in... You have multiple characters to choose from. Like, you can choose as being Alexios or Cassandra siblings. And depending who you are, the other sibling takes a role somewhere else in the story. So there are multiple paths there. There's a decision-making system to where, like, you can choose to respond between three or four different responses every time an NPC talks to you. And then you can make a couple of decisions that kind of affect the way your story plays out. So there's that thrown in there too. They tried to do so much. And obviously there are a lot of people working on this title, but it goes to show, and none of it is bad. Because like I said, everything that you do in this game is fun. And I understand that's kind of the point to play video games, is to have fun. But you still can kind of get pulled out of the experience a little bit when things are not, like, perfectly tailored to what they're trying to do. Like, for instance, I don't want to get into every little wrinkle I have about it, but, like, for instance, the decision-making system. So when you have a game where it's a role-playing game, a full-fledged role-playing game now, and you're given a choice to pick your gender, you can fully spec out your character mechanically, how they play, how they fight, how you want to assassinate, the gear you have, all the customization options that are there, which all that stuff is great, but you also want to add a little bit of... ownership into how your character acts out in the world, like how they speak to people, how they treat people, and everything like that. And with Odyssey, it's like no matter what you try to do, no matter what decisions you try to make, your character is just going to end up some flip-floppy schizophrenic because the game is not tailored for you to, like, okay, I'm going to take my Commander Shepard and I'm going to build my command. You know how when you're creating your Shepard, like, it felt organic. It felt real. Absolutely. It felt like every choice
and
you made.
And every
made
choice
sense.
You made, it connected and made an, it made it made a change to the world. Of how the rest of the characters saw you, and you could see that moving forward.
But your character still felt believable.
Right,
like,
absolutely.
Like, okay, I can stand behind the Shepard that I created throughout this journey, this three-game journey. But just in this one game, my Cassandra was such a schizophrenic. So she's of Spartan heritage, okay? So she's from Sparta, and there's the Peloponnesian War that's happening. And this takes place in, like, around, like, 1450 or something like that. So it's the age of Socrates and Athens and Greece going head-to-head in a big war, and it's the Peloponnesian War.
Okay.
So you have the ability, and that's where these big conquest battles, these big dynasty warrior-style conquest battles come into play, because you can choose to side multiple different times. There's, like, 20 of these different conquest battles, and each time you do it, you can choose to side with Athens or Sparta. Mm-hmm. All right? And even though your character is a Spartan, she constantly, like, speaks to her love of her homeland, of how much she loves Sparta, and she's a Spartan. But yet you have the ability to, like, go to the Athenian general and say, okay, I've killed a whole bunch of Spartans. I've loosened their foothold on this region. Now it's time for us to do a conquest battle and attack them. Are you ready to, Cassandra, are you ready to go into battle? Yes, let's crush these Spartan worms. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You're fucking Spartan. Like, what is the, it doesn't make sense. Like, what are you doing? Like, and that kind of looseness, that playing that fast and loose with the character, that's in everything else. So, like, even though the naval, not going towards the naval,
man, that'll,
it's weird,
pull you out of a game quickly.
And it does that multiple times. So, like, the naval battles, my issues with something like that, the naval battle's fun. Traveling from A to B, like, you never want to fast travel because hopping in that ship is just as fun as it was in Black Flag. But it's not as interesting because in Black Flag, you have, like, cannonballs and you have, like, all this extra... it's not really, I mean, I guess like for their day and age, it's technology, but you have a more interesting arsenal of weaponry in that time period of Black Flag. Whereas in Odyssey, you have like guys who can throw spears and guys who can do bow and arrows or flaming bow and arrows. So like the combat itself is not as interesting because the artillery isn't as interesting, but it's still fun. And again, that's why I stress throughout this entire time to please remember that this game is fun. Everything you do is fun. But it's not trying to be an Assassin's Creed game anymore. You can completely go balls to the wall, arcadey combat action, and have a pretty good time with this game. Like, no assassinations whatsoever. Just like full on hand to hand combat the whole way through. And the game allows for that because of the way your skill upgrades can, you know, fit or tailor fit into that kind of play style. So it's interesting. You can literally play this game any way you want it. And it's a lot more arcadey. Like, from the get-go, you have a weapon that allows you to, like, from distance, like, throw the weapon, and you'll teleport across the map and kill that person immediately. Like, there's so much weird shit that's so un-Assassin's Creed. It kind of, because, like, they take liberties with their historic elements in here, but it's still always rooted in some sort of, like, the physicality of the game is always rooted in some sort of realism. Like, Ezio could never just, like, blink teleport all over the place, but in this game you can do it like fucking minute one, the second you unlock the the second you unlock the ability in the skill tree. So like it's such a weird game, but it's big. There's tons to do. And it's fun and interesting. They really pump the brakes on the modern day stuff, which is kind of like my last gripe with the game. I really enjoy, or have enjoyed in the past, Assassin's Creed games, the marriage between the historical side of the gameplay and the modern day gameplay. I'm really interested in, like, if you would have told me, you know, five to 8 years ago that we still will not get our modern day Assassin's Creed game yet, I'm like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah, I don't Assassin's understand that. Creed. It really seemed like they were moving in that direction with the first few, and then it just never happened. You know, it's like they had a setup for it, and they just never gave it to us.
And in Assassin's Creed 3, we had moments where you actually played as Desmond in the real world, scaling a building to infiltrate in and doing some assassin stuff in there. And it's like, okay, yeah, they're really getting us ready for like this big open world modern day Desmond game. And it's going to be fucking awesome. But for some reason, Ubisoft said, you know what? We're going to switch gears. We're going to kill Desmond. And we're going to give people hardly any. we're going to make anything modern day in Assassin's Creed supplemental. Optional. And to me, that really hurt the series for me. Like, I love the marriage between those two different worlds. I'll never forget knowing nothing about Assassin's Creed aside from the gameplay they showed of Altair, logging into that game, and the first thing that happens is this modern day sci-fi stuff, and I'm like, what the fuck is this game? This is awesome. I remember being so amazed by, like, this is, what a twist, and the game just started 5 minutes ago. This is so interesting. And then from that point on, I was sold between these two different stories they were trying to tell. And seeing that they've really just, like, pushed away from that, there are maybe, like, 3 10-minute sections in a 100-hour game that is devoted to the modern day. It's a small percentage. So that's a really big, that's more or less a gripe on the series as a whole and not necessarily Odyssey. But I would like to see them. I think they've made a lot of mistakes narratively with the modern day section of Assassin's Creed. But again, overall, really fun game. I do like it. There's no way in hell I'm going to have this thing beat by Red Dead. There's just no way in hell.
So does it just fall off?
I think it falls. You know, after Red Dead for me this year, there's nothing I need to buy day one. So November, December, and the first half of January, it'll be catch up for me. I can go back and play Tomb Raider and finish that. I can go back and finish Assassin's Creed, catch up on anything I miss in Destiny. So I'll have a few months, or at least two and a half months of catching up on backlog games for sure. Games I haven't finished. So I'm not too worried about that. Red Dead's the priority for me for sure.
Yeah. Good. So,
yep. But that is it for me.
Okay.
How about you?
Well, I'll get this out of the way. So I picked up Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I picked it up on Steam. So this is actually the first like AAA PC game that I've played since I upgraded my PC. And basically I took my 2011 gaming rig and I put in some more RAM and a new vid card. And, I can play Tomb Raider on highest settings at 60 frames. It's fantastic. Nice. I love it. But I didn't play a whole lot of it, probably about 45 minutes. It was enough to kind of get the gist of the beginning of the story. And
well, you can play the first reboot and get the gist of
true.
Everything in that game. So.
And then get the feel for the controls again. I did grab my Xbox One controller. So I'm using that to play it. But it's very seamless. Looks great. The game is gorgeous. The controls feel like Tomb Raider. So far it hasn't been anything different from what we know of the rebooted Tomb Raider games. And that's not a bad thing, right?
It's not a bad thing. I will say I think they improved most things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that they added the ability to rappel when you're doing the wall climb. So anytime during a wall climb, you can hit either L or R, the triggers, and she'll jab what do they call them? I can't remember what they call the like spikes
the
that you put.
Climbing.
No, it's something else. But she can rappel and just literally hook a cable and rappel down.
Well, it makes everything, no matter where you're hanging, it makes everything a swing point, essentially.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. So far, so good. So I'll get more. I'll play more of that this week and get back to it later. But, of course, I did say that before the next time we record, I was going to beat Spider-Man. And I did so. And the trophy to beat the game also unlocked my Platinum. So... I actually went through and fucking did everything and loved every second of it. I mean, I think the only time where I just felt, the only time where I was unhappy, not really unhappy, but where I wasn't literally loving playing the game was when I was
one moment,
when I was trying to clear out all the crimes in all of the areas.
Right.
And that's so literally it. So
in regards to the story,
loved it, man.
It's really great. No, it's really great, and it finishes incredibly strong.
Super strong.
One of the best game endings, period, of this generation.
To the point where I am actively looking forward to a sequel.
I can't wait. And they do a really good job of like introducing those Marvel post-credit, you know. Mm-hmm. Post-credit scene sequiturs. Those are really great. Those are all fun. And like again, like you said, get you pumped up for the next one. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next game is going to be so great.
I was really excited about the next game. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the characters. Like the way they introduced all the characters and the way that they linked everything together, it felt very... I don't want to say natural because I did feel like there was one piece that was kind of forced. We may do some spoilerish thing later where we talk about that. But, other than that, it all was very natural. Like it's all very believable. Outside of the getting bitten by a radioactive spider and having but so in the world of Spider-Man, it's very believable.
I have one. So if I had any gripe whatsoever with anything related to the main story campaign, they definitely do try at some point to attempt a level, a story mission that they wanted to have. You can tell Insomniac wanted to do their Batman Arkham Asylum Scarecrow level.
Oh,
you know what
yeah.
I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I did not like that. That was like the only story mission where I'm like, I could do without this. I don't need this.
I did not hate it. I didn't, you know, it was just, for me, it was just more of the game. I didn't really have any change of opinion of anything. So, but like it, at the same time, that's kind of a negative because in the Arkham games, like the Scarecrow shit was the best part. Like
it was the best. Yeah.
It was the best part. In this game, that portion, it's just more of the game. You know, it's not, it doesn't really raise anything. And for you, it diminished something. So it really will come down to whether or not you can take or leave what they gave you. What they gave you was definitely not as good as the Scarecrow levels, but it will definitely remind you of that. So, yeah, I 100% understand where you're coming from there.
But I'm glad you beat it, man. That game is,
it was so worth it. And I'll be honest with you, special. I am having trouble now. It's like, what's my game of the year? Is it going to be Spider-Man? Is it going to be God of War? I mean, I don't know. It was that good. Like God of War, I didn't think anything could come close. And then I played Spider-Man and I'm like, holy shit, this is close. You know, it is the best. It's possibly the best open world game I've played.
Period. Which for you, you definitely have a different view of,
I do,
of open
absolutely.
World games or a different opinion on open world games versus like how.
My most of my open world games are quote unquote superhero games.
Yeah, you like
Infamous,
things like that.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit of Saints Row when you threw in the superhero aspects of it.
Yeah, I did play like Saints Row 3. Was it?
I think it was 3 when you really got to just fly across the map. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, absolutely. I definitely have a different view of open world games in general, but this was my favorite. I think just in general,
nice.
It was great.
Yeah,
it's a great
game. Game of the year for me, though, like since you brought it up, like I'm close to a month away from beating Spider-Man or a month removed from it.
Okay.
And I can, now that like the excitement of it, because obviously when I beat it, I'm like, oh, this was the best game. I love it so much. Like, but when now that I have time to like really objectively look, you know, sit back and think about how I felt about Spider-Man versus like a game like God of War, which is a clear front runner. I will say I think like God of War is the better game that's more deserving of you know, at least my Game of the Year title.
I'll need to go back to it because in all honesty, it's like I had plans to get the platinum in God of War as well, and I haven't gotten it yet. So I do want to go back and do that.
By all means, like your desire to go do the platinum shouldn't weigh on, you know, what is a better game or what was the better game to you. Like,
it gives me the opportunity to go back to the game and get a fresh feel for it.
Sure. I can look back and just say God of War is like, I think a better experience. As much as I love Spider-Man, Spider-Man is a close second. Like, who knows where Red Dead is going to rank within that pantheon?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't tell you, but I will easily say that for sure. Like, if God of War is number one, Spider-Man is number two, and it's a close number two.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when I think back at certain moments in God of War and some of the emotional punch, you know, the resonance.
Yeah.
It shook inside of me when I played that game. You know, Spider-Man had that, especially at the end. Spider-Man really shakes you to the core.
And that's the thing. It's like when I played God of War, it was the same feeling at the end. It's like, oh my God, I need a sequel now. You know, because the way they ended it was so good.
Very good.
You know, and I'm with you 100% on that.
So, yeah, it definitely, it still is, like, there's no final decision for me, but where I'm sitting right now, I do think I would choose God of War over Spider-Man, but, like, just by a hair.
Yeah.
Just by a hair. But, yeah, man, I'm so happy you beat Spider-Man. When Jeff comes back, we'll discuss maybe taking, you know, 15 minutes and kind of
doing, like a spoiler.
just talking about our favorite points in Spider-Man. Definitely. We'll do that soon.
Cool. Sounds good. But that's it for me.
That's it for you?
Let's move on.
All right.
What you got for us today?
All right. So for news, we have really in the last week and a half, the only thing people are talking about, it's the news is surpassing even gaming outlets. We're getting reports in Variety and the New Yorker with this specific story coming out of Rockstar. And definitely a sensitive subject for gamers, fans of the culture of gaming, especially after something like Telltale and the reports that they were mistreated and not didn't have great working conditions. So it seems that, I'll just jump right into the article that Kotaku reported that in a feature published yesterday by New Yorker Magazine about the making of Rockstar's ambitious cowboy game, which comes out October 26, the creator Dan Houser talked about working 100-hour weeks and wrote to completion of Red Dead Redemption 2. And the full comment was, the polishing, rewrites, and re-edits Rockstar does are immense. We are working 100-hour weeks several times in 2018. The finished game includes 300,000 animations, 500,000 lines of dialogue, and many more lines of code. Even for each Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer and TV commercial, we probably made 70 versions, but the editors may make several hundred. Sam and I will both make lots of suggestions, as well as will others of the team. And when asked by Kotaku to elaborate, Rockstar sent over a statement. Another one from Dan Houser. He says, there seems to be some confusing arising from my interview with Harold Goldberg. The point I was trying to make in the article was related to how the narrative and dialogue in the game was crafted, which was mostly what we talked about, not about the different processes of the wider team. After working on the game for 7 years, the senior writing team, which consists of four people, Mike Unsworth, Rupert Humphreys, Laszlo, and myself, had, as we always do, 3 weeks of intense work when we wrapped everything up. 3 weeks, not years. We have all worked together for at least 12 years now and feel we need to get everything finished. So many years of getting things organized and ready on this project, we needed to check and finalize everything. More importantly, we obviously don't expect anyone else to work this way. So that was Dan Houser's response, because the internet just
blew
kind
up
of
over it.
Collectively shit their pants over the fact that how dare you work 100-hour work your employees 100-hour weeks? Like, what kind of monster do you think?
And that's the thing. It's like something like that could definitely be taken out of context that way.
And I believe it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
I believe it was.
And that's so. This is not uncommon for anything. That is, if for any project in any, you know, in any background, you know, whether it be IT or construction or whatever it is, or car manufacturing, it's like when it comes to, think about it this way, when car manufacturing, when they get ramped up, they're not working 100-hour weeks, but people are doing double shifts. Mm-hmm. They're doing overnight shifts to get cars in production, that kind of thing. And, you know, from an IT perspective, it's the same thing on my side, dude. I mean, I've put in 60 and 80 hour weeks. I've never put in 100 hour weeks because fuck that. You know, that's one of the reasons I actually backed away from wanting to be in the video game industry and program games, because it's just too much. I mean, we complained about, doing a podcast and not having enough time to game. When you're actually making a game, not only do you not have time to game, but you don't fucking want a game anymore. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, that's just the way it is. And that goes for every industry. And when it comes to IT, it's always a final push. It's never a constant thing. No one's working 100-hour weeks for 52 weeks a year. You know, they're working 100-hour week maybe once or twice a year, you know, just to get that final push, to get that last 10% that's so hard to get. Like, you may spend a year getting that first 90%, and then it takes another year to get that last 10%. And it's all about getting to that 100%. And it takes time. And there are a lot of people that are just passionate enough to do it, where they believe in their product and they are passionate about their product and they just want to see it succeed. And I've been there. I 100% understand how that goes. You know, I personally, I just want to give one example. It's like, for me, this is not just passion, but it's also distraction. But, I know on the show I've talked about my son when he was a baby and when he had to have heart surgery. I was in the emergency room with him working. I had my laptop out and I was working. Mm-hmm. Not only because I was, you know, trying to distract myself from the fact that I was letting my son get cut open, but also because we were working on something new and it was exciting and I was passionate about it. So I understand that it's not, you know, you don't just tell people to work 100 hours. They have to agree to it. And that's the truth of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are hundreds of thousands of people that work in various industries that will agree exactly with the sentiment that you're saying. And there's also Rockstar developers that are saying the same thing, because about 24 hours after these reports released, Rockstar PR and HR gave people who work at Rockstar the green light to go ahead and say, hey, look, if you want to kind of go out and, you know, give people on Twitter your opinion on your experiences and everything like that, feel free to. And many Rockstar developers did. Rallo Legulo said, however, it's easy to fall into the trap if you leave on time and see other people still working, or read a comment about a 100-hour week to feel guilty, to question if you're doing enough to start staying longer. That kind of really doesn't make any sense, but hey, it's a tweet. One guy says, John Loxton says, I've been with Rockstar for 2.5 years now and have gone through crunch, and seeing my friends here going through the same crunch. I can say that though we are all working extremely hard and putting a lot of hours in this game, we are not working 100-hour weeks. A spooky, scary Skelesam says, I haven't worked a 100-hour week in my life. I'm thanked for any overtime that I'm asked to do, and it feels like in these circumstances, it truly was an unfortunate situation. And finally, I'll do one more. Rich Rosado says, just wanted to point out that I was never asked to work anything near a 100-hour work week in the 18 years that I've been working at Rockstar. Overtime is at my own discretion.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's all about what that person can put in, because, you know, everybody understands that life comes first, and right, it's up to that person to decide whether or not they can put their work, have that much time to do their work.
Yeah.
You know, people have kids, you know, it's like, it's, you can't work 100 hours when you have kids, and no boss is going to expect someone to work 100 hours.
Well,
if they have
no
kids.
Boss should expect.
Should them. Expect. And I was, and that no was going to be the next thing I said. I was going to say, expect. If a boss does expect that, he shouldn't be your fucking boss.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I think when you work in a place, whether it's games or any type of IT job or any industry for that matter, I think if you work in a place where you're surrounded by people who are hardworking and who really want to take their job seriously and do a really great job at it, hard work becomes culture, and great culture breeds progress, essentially. And when you are working, you know, at your job, and you're like, well, you know, I think I've done a lot of work today. I can probably sign my name on the day and move on and go home. Yeah. But you get up to leave and you look around and everybody's still pounding away, still working their asses off because they love what they do. It kind of makes it hard for you to stop working. It kind of makes you, you know what? I probably should keep going a little bit longer just to put in a little bit more. There's a little bit more because I see my peers around me, they're working just as hard. So let me pull my weight. So, you know, obviously, yeah, if you have family, if you have kids, there's certain things that would force you to, hey, I need to, you know, work 40 hours or work 50 hours this week instead of 60 or something like that. But I would hope there was not some big behind the scenes meeting with the employees saying that, do not say anything bad about you working 100 hours. Like, I don't think that was happening.
That would happen,
I no. can't imagine anything like that either. Cause it seems like everyone's responses that works, that spoke out publicly from Rockstar. It seemed like pretty honest accounts, pretty, you know, candid opinions on how they feel they're being treated at work. And
yeah.
I like a company who, I mean, obviously they have money, like, I think with Grand Theft Auto 5, including like all the online purchases, like they've made like over $1 billion in that game. So they have quite the runway, especially to be able to develop this game for 7 years. So there's money in the bank for them to have a culture where the bosses say, hey, look, we're not going to ask you to do overtime. We're going to ask you to work hard, but any overtime you do is at your own discretion, as long as you get your job, you do your job. And I think these people do a really, really great job of expressing that mentality, that culture they have at their job. Because it wasn't but like, you know, what was it, 10 years ago, where there were some really negative reports coming out of Rockstar in regards to Red Dead Redemption 1's development. There seemed to be some toxicity spreading around their office, and there were a lot of unhappy employees there. And based on these people, it's good to see that mentality seems to have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's a question for you. Have you ever been in a position where your boss did expect you to work more, even though you were putting in your time and getting your job done?
So obviously not like anything as asinine as 100 hours.
Sure.
Maybe an extra 5-10 hours here or something like that. Mm-hmm. Nothing to the sense where I was like, oh my God, how unfair is this? Like, this is mistreatment. I can't say that's ever happened.
So I'm not going to name the company, but there was one job that I had where I was the only IT person in Atlanta. The rest of the IT team was in Huntsville, Alabama. And one of the things that ended up happening is, you know, I lived in Roswell and I worked in downtown Atlanta at the time. So in order to deal with traffic, I would show up super early and then I would leave early. You know, I'd come in at 7 and I'd leave at like 4, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else strolled in at like 9, 10 o'clock and left at 5 or 6. Well, one of the, and the people that worked there were mostly salespeople and, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the place pulls me into a meeting one day and he's like, it's a bad look for you to be leaving so early every day. And I'm like, I come in at 7. I'm here, you know, 9, 10 hours. And you know, he expected me to stay there until 5 o'clock, like everybody else. And I just literally told the guy, I was like, look, if you have a problem with my performance, that's one thing, but this is what I do. This is how I do it. And, you know, they eventually dropped it. And everyone just got used to the idea that I leave at 4 o'clock or sometimes earlier. But, you know, it was kind of annoying because it's like, you obviously have no idea what I'm doing here. And he would actually right. talk to the lead, like the tech lead who was in Huntsville. And he was like, guy gets his work done. You know, all of his stuff is done. He's always ahead of schedule. And they were still annoyed at the fact that I leave at 4 o'clock. And it was one of those things where it's like, they just did not understand how IT works. You know, it's like people come in and leave when they need to, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, this is the same bunch of people that would go out and do trade shows and stuff. And I'd be at the office till like 9, 10 o'clock because they're at trade shows on your time zone. And I'm in there making sure that the system is up and running so they could shore it off in the environment that they use for trade shows. So, you know, when that kind of shit happens, it's very frustrating and people often will end up leaving. So if it was a situation where people were being forced to work 100 hours a week or something like that, or even if it was like 60, people would leave and then you would hear about it, you know? So the fact that they're saying 100 hours a week, there's no doubt in my mind that that is a very small percentage of people.
Small percentage.
Yep. And it is by choice.
Yeah.
So that's my final 2 cents.
Yeah. And I think Dan Houser's response was...
It was dead on. Yeah, was absolutely. Dead on. It was dead on.
It was not defensive whatsoever. It was very matter of fact. It's like, let me explain what we're talking about. And let me just emphasize that we don't ask people to do this. Mm-hmm. And it seems like most people are... I'm sure it is a stressful working environment, especially when you're in your final months
of like
cleaning a game that massive up. But it seems that, you know, I think it was pretty cleared up. Rockstar seems to have their ducks in a row in regards to taking care of their employees. So
cool.
So yeah.
I agree. Good stuff.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else?
That's it for the news, man. It's been a light news couple of weeks. We were off last week, but not too much to talk about. So,
good deal. I did want to bring up one thing.
Ooh.
And it's kind of a new release, and it's kind of not, because we weren't here last week. And I'm not, I'm very curious about this game. Not necessarily sure if it's going to be good or not. But have you heard of Starlink?
It is kind of like a space arcade shooter with some Star Fox elements to it.
Yes, and it's also a Toys to Life type game.
Okay.
However, that's optional. So Starlink apparently came out this week. Apparently the release date was on the 16th. I didn't know that. I thought it was... I didn't realize it was out. But you can buy a pack that comes with a ship and two pilots and weapons. And the idea is that the ship actually mounts onto your controller. And you can change parts of the ship. And it will change on screen. Right?
Hmm, okay.
So the price of the physical, the actual Toys to Life version is $75. However, one thing that they're doing that other Toys to Life games have not is making an all digital version. And apparently the all digital version, and I may be reading this wrong, but from what I can tell, you get significantly more stuff for $60 with the digital version.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to pick this up and try it out because I'm extremely curious about it. And we don't have enough, like, space flight sims, sims.
No, we don't.
So I definitely want to try this out. I will probably get it on Switch if the performance is as good as PS4, because it has Fox and the R-Wing. Mm-hmm. But if there is a performance difference, I will probably stick to PS4. But hopefully I'll have some information about that next week. We'll see. But
I'll be excited to hear about it.
It's super interesting idea. So anybody who's into space sims, go check that out. And then the last thing I'm going to say is just kind of a plug for Indisplays. I don't know. Do you know what we played this week by chance?
I don't know.
Okay. So I haven't posted it yet, but the video is done. I just finished it today and I'll be uploading it probably either tonight or tomorrow morning, but we played Zero Wing. Are you familiar with that game?
Sounds familiar. Can't pinpoint it though.
Zero Wing is where the All Your Base meme came from.
Oh, okay.
So it's for
classic title.
Yeah. It's a Genesis game. And we played that and it was a blast. So, if you guys are interested, definitely go to YouTube and check that out. It's probably posted by the time this comes out. So, it was a really, really good time.
Sounds like a hoot, my man.
That's it for me though. Anything else?
You know what? I'll throw a plug out there.
Go for it.
Okay. In the 1980s.
Oh God.
There was a lovely, lovely little animated series called Robotech.
Oh, cool.
So, it's been all over the place. Like, Robotech's really trying to make this resurgence. So, there have been talks about a movie, and then the directing responsibilities and the writing responsibilities have been, like, passed on to multiple different people. So, it's kind of, like, in this murky area, but they do think they have a set director and a set writer for the Robotech film, which could be exciting. So, hopefully, we'll see some production news on that very, very shortly. But personally, me, I would like a Netflix series. I think Netflix could really have a good, strong, like, sci-fi space opera, and Robotech would be perfect, but that's neither here nor there. It looks like they're really sticking with a feature film. But one thing that Robotech has released, Titan Comics, an indie comic label, has released, it started releasing last year. About a year and a month ago. They're on issue 13 of a brand new Robotech comic book.
Oh, okay, cool.
All right. And it is, in the first few issues, it just seems kind of like a more modernized, for today's age, retelling or adaptation of the original Macross saga. So you have all your big players. You have your Rick Hunter and your Lin Min Mays, and you have your Roy Fockers, and you have all these guys here. But it's taking the same story and just kind of giving it more of a little bit of a darker, more serious modern tone. And it completely, for me, changes Robotech. Because in Robotech, at the end, when you watch it, it's still very serious. It tackles a lot of serious issues, but it's still, at the end of the day, a 1980s anime. So, you know, take it or leave it. You may like that stuff. You may not like that stuff. But it's still good regardless, even though it does have its anime quirks. This series does not have that. But, like, three issues in, they throw in, like, some Star Trek film reboot plot twists. Whereas things are not as normal as you expect them to be. Like, you lose certain characters in certain situations that never died in, you know, previous shows and things like that. Or they, you know, we lose a person early, or there's some weird time shifting elements going on here and everything. So what they're doing is they're not only are they telling a modernized modernized retelling of Robotech. It is a like a twist, like something's happening behind the scenes that is not right. Some sort of time paradox is happening, and it's super interesting. I love everything that on paper I wouldn't like this. If it was me telling myself this without reading the comics, I'm like, I don't know if I like them fucking around with the timeline of my Robotech, man. I don't know. But like because if I was a Star Trek fan, I probably wouldn't have liked the decisions they made with the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. I probably wouldn't have. I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, so I kind of liked it. But if I was like deep rooted in the continuity of Star Trek, I can see someone not enjoying the decisions that J.J. Abrams and team made. I can see that.
Yeah.
But experiencing it with this Robotech book, I'm like, more people need to read this. So if you have any love for Robotech from your past, pick up this comic. It's so goddamn good. It is so good. It'll like revitalize your need for more Robotech in the world. And it's not much in this IP has, I can say that. Like, they've done video games, they've done new movies, and none of them really, really like got my Robotech need to raise. Like, I need more, but this did it. So if you're a fan of it, it's fucking amazing. It's so good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good deal, man. Good summary, I will say. How about that?
Well, how about that? Let's finish this bitch up. I'm ready to play some games.
Sounds good. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please tell a few friends about us. And check us out at our different social media outlets on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. Just search for Indus Podcast or Interactive Distractions, and you should find us. But yeah, that's about it. Thank you guys for listening. Until next time, my name's Chris.
My name's Travis.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.